This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 5:07. You're listening to the evening edition with Sharmila and Lynn. And we're starting off by doing a retrospective of what happened in Parliament last week. Right before the sitting began, we did catch up with parliamentary researcher Maha Balakrishnan. And today, with Parliament postponed until September, it looks like, we're speaking with Maha again to get her impressions.
I feel like I say this every day now. At some point on the show, I will talk about how long the Parliament sitting was supposed to run and how long it actually did. So just to say that the special parliamentary sitting was supposed to be held over 5 days. It was starting off on the 26th of July. It was supposed to end yesterday, which would have been the 2nd of August. Instead, it ended in a bit of an abrupt and vague fashion on the 29th of July, where it was postponed and there was talk of, okay, maybe we'll get back together on Monday, we'll see how. And then Monday came around and they were like, yeah, no. So essentially, it was suspended following on from COVID-19 cases being detected at the Dewan Rakyat itself.
Yes. So, and if you think about it like a burger that you ordered and you expected a large and got a medium, the other difference is that you asked for particular fillings inside, but were given something else completely. And that's essentially what the parliamentary sitting was. It was meant to discuss a few different things, but essentially the overarching topic that sort of took over most of it was the emergency ordinances, because on the first day, on the 26th of July, the revocation of the emergency ordinances were announced by Takyuddin Hassan, our de facto law minister, to much consternation, to much pushback. But some of the other things that were brought up, though perhaps most would say not to the extent they should have been, on the 27th of July, there were discussions on supporting contract doctors who participated in the Hartal doctor strike. There were more arguments on the emergency ordinance. And then on the 28th of July, there was a briefing by Coordinating Minister Kari Jamaluddin on the national vaccination programs. They also discussed the shortage of basic supplies at vaccination centres. Finally, on the 29th of July, the Agong statement from resulting from the early announcement by Takyuddin Hassan came out. We essentially said that, well, everything wasn't as they had said, that he hadn't, in fact, said that the emergency ordinances should be revoked and instead had wanted them debated in Parliament instead.
So just to say that the emergency ordinances were always meant to be debated, or were always meant to be discussed in Parliament. Debated itself is debated. But they were supposed to be brought up. They were supposed to be looked at. Among other things were the issue of a hybrid Parliament, and the lack of a conversation around that has resulted in what we see now, which is to say that it will meet again in September. And that is really the only path, it appears, by which Parliament can convene, because a hybrid format was not discussed. And I think that you rightly point out that there were some conversations about doctors, there was some conversation about the national vaccination plan, but not enough. I mean, if you look at the amount of planning and execution and spending that has gone out in the name of COVID-19 in the period in which Parliament has not been in session, I think that shows in and of itself, even if you only look at nuts and bolts, even if you only look at money, there was so much to cover and none of that was. So I think that's why today it's a little bit of a review of what happened, but it's also a review in the traditional sense. Is it 4 stars, 5 stars? You know, how would you rate the sitting?
Yes, so we don't just review movies and theatre shows here on Evening Edition. We review parliamentary sittings as well. Let us know, are you looking forward to Parliament hopefully, maybe, convening in September? You can call 7733290, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up after this, we'll be speaking with parliamentary consultant and researcher Maha Balakrishnan for that review of our 4-day parliamentary sitting. So keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Balming frustrated minds, BFM 89.9.
It is 5:13. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we are looking back at our four-day parliamentary sitting. It was supposed to be five, became truncated to four. Looking back at the things that happened and reviewing it in a sort of way. And we'd like to hear from you. There is supposed to be a reconvening in September. Are you looking forward to that? Hopefully. Are you? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And now we're joined by parliamentary consultant and researcher Maha Balakrishnan. Maha, thank you for speaking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So many things have happened over the course of this special sitting, right? What are your overall takeaways?
Well, I think we should probably start from the very end and work backwards, because the PM's statement today casts everything that happened since last week in a new light. The PM's, what I would call a concession in today's statement, that he will bring a motion to annul the EOs in the September sitting, is really what he should have done from the beginning. Many of us in this space have called on him to do so. In fact, I think the last time I appeared on your show about 2 weeks ago, I remember saying this, that Muhyiddin should simply follow the precedent set by the Najib administration and annul the EP and the EOs, sorry, the emergency proclamation and the emergency ordinances. Had he brought the motion to annul, he could have spinned the narrative for it in his favor. And in spite of how loudly the opposition MPs may have protested, ultimately, they would have had to vote in favor of the annulment. And a vote on such a motion could not have been construed as a vote of no confidence against him. Now, instead of doing that, by choosing the course of action he did, he essentially left chaos in his wake. He not only triggered a constitutional crisis between the YDPA and the executive, he also forced MPs, as well as the presiding officers of parliament, to act in ways which do great damage, not just to parliamentary norms, but also to their individual reputations. So my takeaway from this, really, if we were to look at some of these examples, yeah, so the speaker, for example, you know that this special meeting actually marked the first year anniversary of Speaker Azhar Harun. He became a speaker, I think, in mid-July 2020. Now, his reputation has been tested severely in that 1 year. But in my view, the decisions that he made in this special sitting were particularly astounding in how they, in my opinion, weakened and not strengthened Parliament's role and independence. Many of the decisions he made actually ran counter to established Westminster Convention in practice. For example, not accepting motions by other MPs when they were clearly linked to the items on the PM's own agenda for the meeting sets a very bad precedent. And let's not forget that there was the manner in which he shut down some of the female MPs during the discussion of the national immunization program with Minister Khairi Jamaluddin. I mean, the words that he used, but particularly the tone in which they were delivered, I think cannot be accepted in our parliament. And, you know, at the end of the day, all speakers are judged by the house they leave behind. Is it going to be stronger? Is it going to be more independent? Will it be a more capable parliament? And I think many analysts have said that they forecast a general election within 6 to 8 months. And that means that the current speaker has very little time left to ensure that he leaves a stronger, or at the very least, not a worse parliament or Dewan Rakyat than what he inherited from the previous speaker.
I also wanted to look at you. So as you point out, when we last spoke to you, we were really trying to ascertain what the agenda of Parliament might be, because at the time we were told that it would cover emergency ordinances, which ended up swallowing the week, that we would also be talking about things like hybrid Parliament, COVID-19. So let's look at COVID-19, because that's, of course, been the crisis we've faced for so long now. In your view, was there enough time allocated to that discussion? Were there any outcomes from the conversations had in the hall that would have a wider impact on how we're managing the pandemic?
I think some of the question and answer sessions were useful, particularly Minister Khairi Jamaluddin's session, as we all saw. I think because he was very accommodating and very open to take questions from MPs from both sides of the political aisle and to answer them. I'm sure the MPs themselves would also have welcomed the opportunity to be able to put forward the issues that they face, that they've observed from their constituencies and the work that they've done. I'm sure not all of the answers would have been satisfactory, but it was, for a moment in time, for most of us watching this, very encouraging to see that. Now, unfortunately, we didn't see that echoed throughout the, and I'm going to correct you, Shamla, here, not a 4-day session, but actually 3.5. We didn't really get to see that with some of the other ministers. So that was certainly a lost opportunity. But I do think in the main, apart from the National Recovery Plan, it really was about the ordinances, because the impact of the ordinances is severe. And despite the fact that the emergency proclamation has ended, as you've discussed on your show before, the impact of some of the EOs or some of the provisions and some of the EOs will continue for at least another 6 months.
So you did say that, we did say earlier, of course, that the PM has said that the EOs will be debated in Parliament in September. What do you make of this decision? I mean, why that gap, and what is that going to result in?
Well, the reason for the gap is, it would be hard to speculate if there are any other reasons, but the most obvious one to me is the fact that the next parliamentary sitting, or rather the next parliamentary meeting and new session, is in September. So perhaps that's the earliest opportunity in which they can actually proceed. Now, in terms of actually putting forward the motion, as I said earlier, this ought to have been the step that he adopted from the very beginning. In terms of how it actually plays out, if we follow past practice, what we will see is, hopefully, although he didn't make this clear in his statement, hopefully the motion is moved by the Prime Minister or by another minister to annul all the pending emergency ordinances. And there will be a debate. Although I think we can expect that there will be a limited number of days set aside for it, and there will be a vote on the debate. Again, I suspect that the wind has been taken out of the sails of most of the opposition MPs on this, because, as I said earlier, despite what occurs in the debates, at the end of the day, I think all bar a few would have to vote in favour of the amendment.
So where does this leave the emergency ordinance in the meantime? I know that there has been some back and forth, some debate on this. Would the ordinances still apply until they are revoked? What are your thoughts?
Some of them will. Some of the provisions in some of the ordinances will continue to apply. And I think, again, this has been discussed, and I agree with the general view, which is that where there are provisions within ordinances which are conditioned upon the existence or the continuing existence of the emergency. So, for example, it starts with the phrase, for so long as the emergency is in effect or is in force, those ordinances or those provisions cease to have effect as of the 2nd of August, really. But not all of the ordinances or not all of the provisions start with that phrase. And those are the ones that we really need to look at because they have huge impact. So, for example, the ordinance that essentially enacts fake news laws, yeah, anti-fake news laws, and carries a maximum sentence of 6 years, a compound of 500,000 ringgit, that I think will continue to have effect and be enforceable for the next 6 months. Similarly, there is the emergency essential powers and amendment ordinance, which allows the government to draw on the Federal Consolidated Fund and State Consolidated Funds without parliamentary approval, without state legislative approval. So that too, if I'm not mistaken, doesn't have that rider and therefore will continue to be in effect for 6 months until it is annulled.
So I want to bring up one thing that the Sampurna MP brought up, Datuk Sri Shafiq Abdal, right? So he said that the Agong can order the Prime Minister to prove his majority in Parliament, which of course is something that's that a lot of people have called into question. What do the laws say about this, and how would that process work?
Okay. you know, the laws in this area, as I'm sure most of your listeners are aware by now, the laws and the constitutional provisions are not clear. They are not, they don't expressly control for every possible situation that can arise. And there are good reasons for this. We cannot hope to predict all possible permutations in the political sphere down the line. Yeah, but what we can draw from both the Constitution as well as from constitutional conventions and precedents is that the obligation of the Prime Minister to command the confidence of a majority of MPs under Article 43 of the Constitution is a continuing obligation. So what that means is that it can be tested at any point in time on the floor of the Day One Rakyat or even before the YDPA. Now, custom and practice dictates that the YDPA as the constitutional monarch must be very slow to interfere. Yeah. And he should only resort to using his reserve powers to proactively summon the incumbent PM to prove his majority only as a last resort, in my view, and only under very limited circumstances. I will, however, say that before today's statement from the PM regarding the session in September and his intention to put forward a motion to annul, I feel that the PM himself was making the case to be hauled before the YDPA to prove his majority. But perhaps that crisis has been averted for now.
Now, Maha, you mentioned earlier the criticisms that have been directed at the Speaker of the House, of which there have been numerous, and specifically at least one avenue for suppressing motions that have been put forward. What are the mechanisms that exist to keep the Speaker accountable?
The structure of the Westminster Parliament is such that there is reposed in the Speaker of the House quite significant discretion and discretionary power, and also a reserved discretion to really interpret the rules of the House himself where necessary. But over and above all of this, the decision of the House is paramount, and the House maintains complete control over how it chooses to regulate its affairs. What we find in our parliamentary system is that we inherited this sort of thinking, yeah, about how we frame the rules of engagement in Parliament and the rules of order in Parliament. Unfortunately, what we didn't inherit, and we still haven't managed to develop on our own, is a culture of parliamentarianism. Now, in other jurisdictions, in other parliaments, in more mature governments, you will see that when there is this ambiguity in the rules, in the written rules, more often than not, the speaker acts as an independent arbiter. And so he must, or he or she must, because the decisions that they make have consequences in the future. Because we seem to be missing that gene, I feel that certain advantage has been taken of these areas of ambiguity, the gaps in the margins of the rules. And in my mind, I think what we must all really consider moving forward is to reform the parliamentary rules, to take a look at where these gaps are. And I'll give you a very good, just a simple example, if I may, coming back to the motions, yeah, because that's very easy to pinpoint. Now, the rules are very strict about the notice period that each MP has to submit a motion. And there's a lack of equality already between ministers who have a shorter notice period and can even, you know, turn over a motion within 24 hours, and non-ministers, so opposition MPs and backbenchers, who have to, as a general rule, submit motions 14 days in advance, as a general rule. What we don't have in the rules is a requirement for a response time from the speaker, right? And, you know, there shouldn't be, because obviously we would expect the speaker or the secretariat to act promptly. And this then enables an MP whose motion has been denied to perhaps review it, resubmit it, correct it. Now, if the secretariat, not deliberately, I'm not saying deliberately, but if the secretariat or the speaker's office delays in communicating back to an MP, that means that particular MP may be deprived of his or her right to, let's say, submit a fresh motion. So this is just one example of how within the system itself, inequalities and the lack of parity can sort of be sort of underscored if you don't have a culture of parliamentarianism as a basis or as a foundation within parliament.
Maha, we just have about a minute left. What would you like to see happen during the September sitting?
Well, unfortunately, I suspect that the machinations by MPs on both sides of the political aisle force some sort of reckoning on the floor of the House is likely to continue. But what I really hope is that this will not distract from the good work that can actually be done through parliamentary committees, because their work can be done free of these immediate political considerations. Now, there are nine committees, with the PAC being the 10th. And as a whole, they can achieve a lot of difference. They can be the conduit and the voice between society, non-government entities, and government. So I'm really hopeful that the committees will be empowered to do their work, and that they will receive all the resources that they need and have the capacity to do so.
Maha, thanks for speaking with us today.
You are most welcome. Thank you for having me.
That was parliamentary consultant and researcher Maha Balakrishnan speaking to us, a retrospective of sort of the parliamentary sitting. Let us know, are you looking forward to the parliament convening that is happening in September? Send your thoughts our way. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.